The most important part of that second step is what's in your lifeboat. That is, okay, so what's the core we're going to save, and make sure that you remember there is going to be a morning after. This will end,
right.
and you've assessed whether it's going to end sooner or later, but it will end. And so when you're figuring out if you need to make cuts and what type of cuts you need to make, don't forget that you don't want to throw out the most important things you're going to need when recovery comes. That is, was there an asset in people or resources or IP or something else that when money does appear and customers do show up again, that you have that asset, you need it. Don't be incredibly short-sighted. I would save a couple of things that might not be obvious now but for survival, but you might need for recovery.
And now, from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast, with your host, Christine Winoto.
Today, our guest is Steve Blank. Steve is a man who needs no introduction in the startup world. He started the concept of customer development that forms the basis of the lean startup approach. He is the creator of Lean Launchpad, an author of the Startup Owner's Manual, and Four Steps to the Epiphany. And he's also a lecturer at top business schools in the country. My conversation with Steve today is dead serious. He's got detailed advice for the many, many startup founders who find themselves in crisis mode today because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Burn rate is top of the list, and Steve has tough advice for founders who need to make the hardest of decisions. But he wants you to keep in mind that, as he says, there will be a morning after, and you need to be ready for that too. If you are in the right areas, there may even be new opportunities to go after. I hope you enjoy our conversation, and if you like what you hear today, please subscribe to our series on iTunes. I hope everyone is safe and stay healthy. Be well. And one more thing. Are you a founder of a health technology startup looking for an industry partner or seeking funding from seed to Series A? Apply to the 2020 Rosenman Innovators by Tuesday, April 14. Applications are open on February 18 and details on our website at rosenmaninstitute.org. Before we start, I just want to thank you for taking the time again. I always wanted to reach out to you, and I always find, like, you know, we all get so busy, and it's like, oh, and when I think about, you know, with this whole COVID-19, how we can provide more information to our startup, your name popped up first on my mind. So I said, let's have Steve come give a talk through our podcast. So thank you.
Sure.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
So I know it's been a crazy time. I definitely did not see it coming. Even though, surprisingly, around January, somebody I knew very well warned me about this whole situation.
Really?
Yeah.
January, what?
He used to live in Singapore during the SARS time. And I was literally telling him that he was being, I don't know, germophobic, like over paranoid about thing. He even told me, like, you better stock up on food and, you know, all the dry goods that, you know, just get it ready because it's coming. And wow. I'm thinking, like, why did I not listen to him?
Well, because it was such an outlier. I mean, you know, human beings tend to discard outlier stuff.
Right. And, I guess. Right. If I had listened to him, I would have been called by DOJ now for the insider trading. So, but maybe, you know, with this whole COVID-19, this is such an unprecedented crisis. But we have crisis in the past. I know it's different. And but I think oftentimes you can learn from the past crisis. And I, you know, you have seen quite a few and you have written it too. And, you know, what are the similarity between crisis to crisis and how startups survive that?
Sure. And should we focus just on startups?
Yeah. Let's focus on startups. Yeah.
So, let's start with what's different. What's different is this is the first time we've manufactured a crisis. The people dying is in pandemics have happened before, but not at this scale or not in a modern economy. And we've decided to trade off jobs for keeping a million people or so alive in the United States and probably more worldwide. So number one, what's different is there's no bubble that's burst like in 2000.com crash or housing bubble in 2008. We've manufactured this economic crisis. So that being said, it's still a crisis. And what that means for startups is, in this case, it looks a lot like nuclear winter or an epoch-changing event. And what I mean by that is that most startups won't survive. And they won't survive not because of anything of their own doing, mm-hmm. but because they will run out of customers and cash, period, end of discussion. If you're a startup that is cash flow negative, meaning your burn rate, the amount of money you're spending each month exceeds your revenue, because you might not have any revenue yet. If you're an early stage life science or biotech or device or diagnostic company, or you have no revenue at all, you were expecting either another round of funding, or you were expecting some revenue to come in, or some partnerships, or maybe some liquidity event. The odds of those happening now have changed probably about 100x.
Right.
And if anybody tells you exactly how they've changed, they're lying to you. I have a bridge I'd like to sell you as well. But all the trends say it's going to be pretty miserable. There are going to be a few winners here, obviously, in digital health. I have an investment in a great clinician tool called Bot AI, but the rest of the stuff, if you were working on, device X or therapeutic Y, I'd be looking at your burn rate and not believing a word that your past investors have told you about, we're right behind you.
Right.
And the reason why is they're also playing lifeboat strategy, because everything trickles down is that they might have raised a huge fund if they were investors, but now all of a sudden they have to support their later stage deals, which were the most valuable, which all of a sudden no longer have liquidity events that were going to come up. That is, deals that the later stage companies were going to get bought or get funded or go public. All those are off the table. And so now if I'm an investor, I'm reprioritizing where I'm going to put my capital. Doesn't mean everything's going to go to zero, but it means if you have a term sheet but not a check in the bank, the odds of that term sheet being lived up to or have just decreased, not to zero, but I'd not believe it until I have a check in the bank. Mm-hmm. Or, if you were expecting valuation at price X, I would be assuming that price is no longer valid. VCs are walking away from all of that stuff. The good or bad news is, we will come out at the other end. There will be, in this case, a morning after. It's, the only silver lining is that this is not SARS or Ebola mortality rates. So there will be an economy and there will be a day after. But specifically for startups and startup CEOs, you need to be worrying about burn rate and runway. And when that runs out, you've run out of moves. So there's a process one could go through to kind of think through how to survive. But I'm just trying to answer your first question, is what's different?
Yeah.
What's different is the stuff has hit the fan. It's not some economic bubble popping. It's a conscious decision to crater the economy to save a million lives.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think because of that, the fundamental was there, but now the fundamental is disappearing.
Well, we should question what's the fundamentals, right? I mean, startups and angel and venture capital, risk capital was always a giant Ponzi scheme, and I mean it in a nice way, to the extent that, you know, they gave you money so they could make a ton of money at the other end, assuming that there were greater fools at each stage to value you, you know, more and more. And in the old days, in the 20th century, when I was an entrepreneur, value was based on revenue you would generate. And there was no taking money off the table until that revenue could be proven. Mm-hmm. And there was, therefore, the liquidity event was based on revenue and potentially profit. In the 21st century, that no longer was true in most cases. Mm-hmm. Value was just based on what would the greater fool pay at the next round. And founders were taking money off the table as well as investors at each round. Mm-hmm. And liquidity were at valuations that were basically disconnected from any real revenue or dollars. So, when you ask fundamentals, well, we might go back to 20th century fundamentals where show me some revenue or show me some profit. Obviously, in life sciences, that was always very difficult, right? Because you don't see results for therapeutics for a decade or two. You might see a partnership or a licensing deal later stage or a R&D deal early on. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, still took 10 or 15 years for something to happen. And let me be clear. I mean, you know, as of today, I've still seen deals closing, you know, north of $100 million. So it's not, I just want to point out, it's not like zero and everybody's gone home. Mm-hmm. But if you're a startup CEO, every bet about where money was going to come from, particularly in life sciences, are just over. Doesn't mean it's zero, but it means all your assumptions are over. And stop me if I'm just babbling, but if you're a startup CEO, you need to basically, you kind of have this spectrum of things you could do. You could, on one extreme, you could panic, things on fire. And the other is just sit around and say, no, nothing's changed. You know, we got money in the bank. Let's keep going. Mm-hmm. And I suggest something right in the middle, which is first you need to do an assessment of external things that have changed and internal stuff. I'll go through the three steps. So one is you need to assess. Number two is you need to decide whether you're changing your business model and cash flow and everything else. And then step three is you need to act. You need to act quickly. If you're interested, I could go through each one.
Please do. Yeah.
So if you think about an assessment, you know, the external stuff is pretty easy, I think, is, you know, like what's going on first of all, what's going on in the economy in your country, right? It's like, you know, today, last week, we had 3.3 million people apply for unemployment. This week, 6.6 in the United States. And you have to assume those numbers are going to get larger. Okay. But I'd like you to, if you're the CEO, tell me what's going to look like in, you know, May 1st, June 1st, you know, give me a quarterly forecast and your guess is going to be as good as anybody else's, but just write that down. Right. And then how's it look in your industry? Are your potential customers, whether they're drug companies or someone else or end users, buying at all? And if you're selling to other companies, are their customers buying from them? Maybe they're dead, but they don't know it yet. And again, there's no magic here. You will discover very quickly whether you're right or wrong, but you need to like write that down because you're going to share it with a bunch of other people.
Right.
If you need cash, you know, how's your sources of cash doing? Are venture capitalists or private equity firms pulling back from your sector, or if you're in therapeutics or, mm-hmm. you know, therapeutics, devices, diagnostics will all have different dynamics. Generally, they're all kind of funded from the same pool of capital, but because of burn rate, people might make different decisions for therapeutics versus digital health.
Right.
What's it look like outside and just in general? And then you need to do an internal assessment. As I said, the number one thing you need to look at is, or number one and two, is burn rate and runway. Assuming we get no more cash with our current headcount and current expenses, when do we run out of money?
Right.
That's a internal and external assessment.
Yeah.
And, you know, that detail breaks down to, you know, how much are fixed costs, meaning like, you know, rent and server space, and how much are variable costs, which are people and consultants and whatever.
Right.
So once you take that assessment, I would have, and the way I would do this is kind of put together a war room with the C-level staff in your company. This should not be done by second level or third level people down. The C-level execs, who are led by the CEO, need to meet for a day, mm-hmm. just a day, and hack out what do we believe, what's going to happen, and a day, not 5 days, not like let's schedule the conference room for the meeting to have the meeting to have the planning,
right?
But you just want to do one of these,
yeah.
because your level of precision is going to be as good as any economist now,
right?
Because no one effing knows,
yeah.
But you need to have some baseline to make some decisions,
right?
And very quickly, if you do this in a day. Here's where it'll get interesting. Then you get your board or investors on the phone and you say, here's our assessment of internal and external environment. What do you guys see? And the good news is that they're probably dealing with a portfolio of 10 to 15 other companies having the same conversation. And so rather than having to get the level of precision down to the third significant digit, you'll find some data that you didn't understand that they understand, or mm-hmm. or they're kind of trying to signal to you, no, you're not going to get another round, though a few will probably tell you that this week.
Right.
So you could take that data to go to step two. Does that make sense
yeah.
so far?
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. And I think, as you know, we said earlier about human being, we, especially entrepreneurs, we tend to be more optimistic, right? Even when they look at this scenario, especially when you pick numbers from, you know, any assumption, it's hard to imagine the worst.
It's hard to imagine. And I'm going to go through why, remind me at the end of this, because there really is a difference between CEOs who operated in this environment versus CEOs who operated on optimism, and that requires a mental shift. But
mm-hmm.
but step two is, once you get kind of, you don't even need consensus. What you really need is just like, I now got some other data. My VCs and investors have heard my data, because I told them at the end of the conversation, guys, I've heard you. Here's the data we're going to operate on, and I'm going to get back to you in 3 days with our new plan. It's a big idea, new plan. And so the second step is, you take that assessment data externally, what's going to happen, you know, internally, what's our numbers, et cetera, and you come up with three pieces. One is, what's our new business model? That is, do we need to pivot into a different sector? Or, you know, like, do we still think we want to be in the same business with the same customers, same pricing, you know, short term and long term? If we thought this was going to be better in June, maybe it'd stay the course. If we think it's going to be a 3-year impact, then maybe we ought to pivot into a, you know, different device, or gee, if I'm on a regulated life sciences segment, you know, one of the parts of the external assessment is, oh my gosh, the FDA has just loosened a set of regulations that actually make our business potentially better.
Mm-hmm.
They don't affect us today because we don't have a product yet, but our market now just became larger. So for example, if you're in telemedicine, you know, the whole stuff about CMS reimbursement rules have just gotten better. The ability to do telemedicines and cross state lines and diagnostics have just gotten better. A lot of the regulations about therapeutics have gotten better. So in some cases, it might actually be better if you could survive that long.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, you know, you got to be careful about the pivot you do. Oh, let's be in the vaccine business. Well, you know, go look at what happened to all those companies who tried to develop drugs for vaccines for SARS and Ebola, you know, once they figured out that wasn't a major threat, those companies all died because the government lost interest and there was no market. So, you know, it's one of those, let's be altruistic versus, gee, we put ourselves out of business historically because there was no guaranteed market for production or for revenue in the end. So one is, you need to think about, what's the business model, plus or minus, and for how long do we want to think about that? And then two is you need to think about the hard stuff, which is all the operating numbers, right. People cost are usually, the largest part of a company. But for life sciences, there are other costs as well, all my regulatory consultants and, I'm trying to get a CPT code and whatever, I'm running clinical trials. Do I need to put those on halt because no one could run a trial now? Or,
right.
I mean, how's that world working? I'm burning cash on these things and do I need to stop them? And so that's kind of tough. Your CFO and you need to start looking at those numbers. But here's what's different about the first step, which was the assessment done by your C-level. Everybody in the company ought to be able to participate in this conversation. Meaning, I would just put out to everybody, hey, here's our assessment that us and our investors have come up with about external and internal environment. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. We need to think about how to survive. Here's what we're thinking about changes to the business model and operating plan. Anybody got any other ideas? And I would open that. So number one, it tells the entire company it's all hands on deck.
Right.
It says, listen, we're smart because we are the C-level execs, but we're not the smartest people in the building. That might include some of you.
Right.
If we're missing something, let us know. But you have 3 days to figure this out. Not 3 weeks, not 3 months. It really isn't a complicated math problem. How do you survive? What are you going to do? And some of these are going to come down to some tough people cuts or expense cuts or putting some programs on hold or, and part of this is also checking, okay, where are our investors? And by the way, the phrase, we're right behind you, are either said by investors who are incredibly naive, who've never been through something like this, or are lying through their teeth, or simply don't know. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would believe is we have another check in the bank.
Nice.
And if you don't have that, I would not be depending on promises. The only thing I would be depending on right now is cash.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second step. And when you make those decisions, the most important part of that second step is what's in your lifeboat. That is, okay, so what's the core we're going to save and make sure that you remember there is going to be a morning after. This will end,
right.
and you've assessed whether it's going to end sooner or later, but it will end. And so when you're figuring out if you need to make cuts and what type of cuts you need to make, don't forget that you don't want to throw out the most important things you're going to need when recovery comes. That is, was there an asset in people or resources or IP or something else, mm-hmm. that when money does appear and customers do show up again, that you have that asset, you need it. Mm-hmm. Don't be incredibly short-sighted. I would save a couple of things,
right.
that might not be obvious now but for survival, but you might need for recovery. And then finally, the third part is you need to act immediately. And this is really hard. As well, maybe it's going to get better. And I don't know about you, but I don't know what evidence people need anymore that it ain't going to get better in the next, certainly in the next month, probably the next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's only going to get worse. And what I mean worse is, we have some pretty accurate forecasts about the people impact and the economic impacts are becoming clear to almost everybody.
Right.
And the toughest part I've seen for first or second time CEOs or even experienced CEOs is not cutting enough and not cutting quickly, mm-hmm. enough. Maybe we could save X and then we'll... So you tend to lay off people a slice at a time.
Oh, yeah, that's
one
the
week,
worst.
And then another week. And not only is it the worst, you don't understand as a CEO, you've actually destroyed productivity.
Right.
Because everybody is looking over their shoulder.
Yeah.
Are we next? And so, if you have a 1,000-person company, just as a model, we lay off 100 people, the first week, then 2 weeks later, another 100 people, then another 100 people a couple weeks after. Nothing's getting done because you've laid off 300 people, but everybody is like just kind of panicked, and not panic running around, but panic going, this seems to be a random event. And so what I suggest is something a little more draconian, but actually in the end is good for everybody, is that you make, instead of cutting 300 people over 3 weeks or 3 months, you cut 400 people on day one. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If the environment is as tough as we think, it's the right thing to do. And you'll be able to hire people back if you overshot, because there will be lots of good people on the street. You can hire the extra 100 you laid off. And that's tough, because as you do that, it's not just a numbers game. It's also, you need to deal with people with compassion, and you need to protect the most vulnerable. I mean, I suggest to startup C-level staff is that before you lay off everybody, the C-level staff needs to take at least a 30% pay cut, and that everybody else in the company needs to take a 20% pay cut. And if they think they could get other jobs in this economy, time to go. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no law that says you need to do that. But if you're still, you and your top employees, you're still taking the same salary and you're putting people on the street. People are going to remember what an asshole you were. No, unfortunately, there's no law against that. But that's not how I would treat people. So some model of compassion and trying to do that. And so that's kind of the three steps is assess, decide, and then act. And my suggestion is you got a week to do that, because burn rate doesn't go away while you're deciding. It's just cranking up. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Ratnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that helps life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownratnick.com.
And I want to answer your question about why this is hard. Why this is hard is because we plan for growth as CEOs. We don't plan for crises. I mean, there are some companies that kind of run the drill about what a crisis drill would look like. But most companies assume that, you're looking for a business model, and when you find product market fit, you're doing execution.
Right.
People talk about the difference between a, quote, peacetime CEO and wartime CEO. Number one, it's insulting to anybody who's ever served, because a layoff versus a killed in action on the battlefield, they're not the same. But importantly, they miss the key difference. Is that people who serve in the Army or Marines train for the fight. Mm-hmm. That is, they run battle drills all the time. They're simulating a crisis constantly. That is their job, is to operate in chaos and uncertainty. And therefore, they drill for what actions do you take when everything explodes around you so it doesn't look like chaos. You kind of try to see through that fog of that battlefield. They give you tools to how to think and how to act. We're not trained at all, right? So what a surprise. We're kind of, sometimes frozen about what do I do? This is a series of unknowns. We've never run battle drills. We've never trained for the fight. We've trained for, there's gold on the other side of the hill rather than we might die. The problem is that, now, much like on the battlefield, if you sit around and wait for orders or wait for, somebody to tell you what to do, the odds are that your company is going to die because the market will decide for you.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now, all this was suggestions to companies that are, cash flow negative.
Right.
If you happen to be somebody who's just raised a ton of money, not only is that good, you ought to understand the opportunity to pick up world-class people from other companies you could never have hired,
right,
or world-class assets or world-class IP. This is a time not to sit around and also have a meeting to have a meeting. I would also do an assessment. On the other side, if you're that rare company that just raised, a couple hundred million bucks,
right,
and like your that is VC, you're saying, can you return
timing. Check?
It's perfect timing, but not just to continue your building, continue building what you're doing. I mentioned this tool for clinicians. One of my smartest students, she was part of Paul Yock's biodesign program and then took my class at Stanford, She's in Singapore, so her first idea was, well, we'll roll out our product in the hospitals in Singapore, and and then we'll hit Asia, and then we'll eventually come to the U.S., and which was a great strategy, you know, March 1st. And it took a couple of conversations, as smart as she was, to go, Dot, you know, her name's Dorothea, so Dot, you know, it's time to think about, there are new opportunities that didn't exist. Right. Well, Steve, my head is down and we're doing great in Singapore. Well, yes, but every hospital in the U.S. could use your data on COVID-19. And finally, you know, she was smart enough, but it took even her a while for the light bulb to go on. That says, because when you're an entrepreneur, your head is down. You are focused on your market and your industry and execution. And what do you mean I now need to think big thoughts again? And I did that when I started the company. I mean, remember, that's the pattern is when you're starting a company, your head is out. You're looking at markets and tech and industry and opportunity and the science. But when you're implementing, your head is down.
Right.
And now this requires a pop-up again that says, oh, you know, crisis, but oh, maybe also opportunity. And that was a good example of, I don't know how many 2 a.m. phone calls, because she is in Singapore.
He's lucky to have you.
Yeah. But does that make sense?
Yeah.
And of course, now, you know, like after a couple, no, it only took her a couple of days. So I had to draw a diagram about, you know, I got a picture of a world map and drew an arrow that said, you know, you are here pointing to Singapore, and other bigger arrows that said world domination,
right,
pointing to U.S., you know, EU and China. And like we were laughing because she got it, but she wasn't mentally prepared that there was a bigger opportunity that said, hey, you thought you were going to be raising a small round. Now's the time to actually, where everybody else is like not going to be able to get funded. You actually happen to be in one of those small areas, right, that actually not only is it applicable pre-virus, it's applicable post-virus, but this allows you to scale faster.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's amazing how human brain works, right? And I think that's why getting advice from people who are not too close is so important, because they allow you to see the forest.
And this is the only time that entrepreneurs, a young entrepreneur should pay attention to people with gray hair. It's only because A, we've probably seen this movie before, and B, if we're not in the middle of it, you know, we could kind of give you a pattern, right? And say, here's a tool set or a framework to think about to put this chaos and uncertainty in a context. And I want to make sure your listeners and viewers understand that this is one person's opinion. There is no facts here.
Right?
Your people's opinions are going to be probably as valid as mine, but it's a framework to think about how to operate in uncertainty.
Yeah.
And how to make decisions. Did this help?
Yeah, definitely. And I think sometimes I have not talked to anybody particularly yet, but sometimes, especially in the life science startup company, they felt, well, the need of, you know, people treating cancer will be there. The need for, you know, this disease will still be there. And so I think sometimes they think like, well, you know, right now I'm still going to keep on going, because when, you know, all is over, I'm ready. But I like what you're saying in terms of like, sure, but how long do you know, how long, you know, this thing's going to last? Is that 3 months, a year, 2 years?
Right. And I think you just raised a key point. The science will always be the science. The need to you know, have a therapeutic will always be there. But that's not the business problem.
Right.
Business problem is about cash flow, liquidity, runway, whether you're, you know, what's happening to the drug R&D pipeline of your partners, what's happening to, you know, those folks, or on the plus side, what regulations has changed. So, you know, when I used to teach what was called the I-Corps for the NIH, you know, it was always hard to have the principal investigators separate out their technology from the business, right? Your idea or your science is not the business. right? It's part of the business. It's a core part.
Right.
But the rest of the things, the regulatory regime, the clinical trials, the, you know,
that requires cash. You know,
right. The cash, you know, your scientific advisory board, you know, like all that other stuff that, like you said, oh, someone else will worry about that. Well, now, no, we're all in this fight. You need to worry about it as well, or else your science will still be your science, but it'll be sitting in your lab back in your university because, like, it can't get funded right now.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think your comment is dead on. Everybody should understand that need will be there, and there will be a morning after. The question about is whether it's the right time for the company.
Right.
Because of externalities that had nothing to do with you or your science. But you've got to admit, the world on the 1st of April is not the business world on the 1st of March. So those assumptions have changed. And again, if you were lucky enough to have cash in the bank or have raised a ton of money, then maybe you could operate like nothing has changed. But if you're other startups, perhaps not.
Yeah. So is it fair to say that every startup have to look at their operation plan and do something differently from what they've done in the past because of this crisis? And for them to say, I think we have enough money for the next year or 2 years, let's just keep on doing because, you know, in 2 years, everything will be back to normal, which I don't believe everything will be back to normal in 2 years.
So yes, I would say maybe a little broader, every startup should go through those three steps. You know, one is let's do an internal and external assessment. You know, let's understand if we need business model and operating plan changes. And step three is let's act immediately. And maybe if you're the lucky startup, acting is hiring or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not, let's make whatever changes are necessary. But let's do this with, I keep using the word speed and urgency, and I can't emphasize how important that is. This is not, particularly if you're a science-based startup, which most life sciences are, you typically don't operate under...
You need data.
You need data, right? You don't operate with insufficient data.
Right.
And this is the time that's going to make your head explode because no one has sufficient data. You need to operate on a sparse matrix here. Using judgment. And so therefore you need to force a decision on insufficient data by putting a stake in the ground saying we're going to decide in a week.
Right.
And for some PIs, it's like, ah, I can't do that. No, we need to run the data. No, you know, this is where people who are trained for the fight are actually good.
Right.
And people who need sufficient data will kind of melt down a bit.
Right.
But decisions need to be made. And everybody needs to agree that we're going to make decisions on insufficient data. The entire world right now is making, that is, we could maybe plot the virus, but no one could actually plot exactly the recovery time for economies. Is
right.
this a, you know, in the third quarter, we're all going to bounce back and everything's going to be normal? Well, that is one side of the curve in prediction. But what's the bell curve on predictions for the economy? And by the way, it's not the general economy. You need to understand what's the impact in our sector, whether it's therapeutics or devices or diagnostics or digital health. That's what we care about. What are our customers going to be doing? What are our partners? What are our investors going to be doing for the next 5 or 6 quarters in our segment? And anybody tells you they know or will know better next week is probably wrong. So you need to make some decisions.
Inaction is a bad decision right now.
Yeah, action this day.
Yeah. So on the bright side, what do you think will come up from this whole crisis?
Well, clearly telemedicine has changed forever. Clearly, in the United States, regulatory regimes have changed forever as well. You know, it's kind of hard when you let some cats out of the bag to put them back. For good, I think, for most of those changes are things that needed to happen. I think it's going to be nuclear winter for a ton of unfunded or people who were about to raise cash. And maybe I'm wrong, but I lived through, you know, 87, 2000, 2008. I think there'll be lots of losers and new winners. Mm-hmm. I mean, new things will get funded. It's not that no new things will get funded. It's not that I would not want to raise start a company now, but I would just be understanding that a lot of investors are going to be hiding under their desks. You know, what's changed in the investment side, and it really is going to depend, believe it or not, what the private equity funds are going to do and the hedge funds are going to do and the sovereign wealth funds are going to do. In the last crashes, they were never major participants in funding, and now they are. You know, if that late stage money disappears, then this will have a bigger impact. I just think it'll be a reconfiguration of a lot of industries, and that should be part of the assessment: is what do we think is going to happen at the other end, and when do we think it's going to happen? And if I knew that, I'd be running a hedge fund right now. And as I said, I think each segment is going to be quite different. You know, the rules on creating and testing diagnostics are probably being thrown out of the window right now, right? So if you're a diagnostic firm, yeah, it's not a virus test, but
you can piggyback on that rule.
And more importantly, you need to pay attention to the reimbursement rules. While the clinical trials rules might have changed, did reimbursement from CMS change?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So I always am on a hopeful side as well. When every time there's a crisis, there's also an opportunity.
Of course.
That's how the world is. And that's where we make us.
Yeah, there will be a morning after. And you just want to make sure you're a part of that.
That's true. So, well, I think that's on that note. I think thank you for taking the time and share your insight and thought. And I hope we all showed up in the morning after.
Yeah. We'll all be here for sure.
Yeah.
Stay healthy and stay safe. And the same to your listeners and viewers.
Yeah. So it's stay healthy, shelter in place. I think, it helps. So thank you. Stay safe. Bye. Thank you for listening today. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.